I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Here to lay down another pipe bomb on wrestling's pay-per-view past. I am your primetime host, CMG, and tonight I am joined by my good friend, the troll of trolls, TWK from Review RVTV, and we'll call it by its old name, Reviewtopia.
That's it. It's called RVT Entertainment. You can find that my videos over at rvtentertainment.com and bookinfinite.blogspot.com.
Absolutely. And of course, co-host of the WrestleCast, my partner in crime over on Riff Down, which you can check out every Friday night on RVT Entertainment.
Yep. You can find us. Yep. You can listen to RVT. You can listen to Riff Down over on RVTV every Friday night at 8 p.m. You know, whenever SmackDown comes on, you know, I'm there riffing it, and Mass is usually there when he is able to make it. And usually you have my buddy Bobbert and Puzzle there. They're usually there too. And occasionally we even have the other Jewish guy, Car Junkie.
Why am I blanking on his name now? We also have some other...
Brimstone Sean.
Brimstone Sean, thank you.
The other guy from New Jersey.
There's a couple of us from New Jersey.
Yeah, there's three of you. Pugsley, Brimstone Sean, and you.
Yes, yes.
Hey, you're the Jersey Triad.
How appropriate, considering what we are talking about tonight.
Now, we have to talk? Do we have to talk about the pay-per-view itself? Can we just talk about everything else? Let's talk about some genocide. That's a much lovelier topic than this pay-per-view at this moment.
Well, considering I didn't see it, and we both put ourselves through hell for watching this, we might as well tear this pay-per-view the new asshole it deserves.
Oh, no kidding, because I wasted an entire afternoon watching this, I'll have you know. I could be doing many things more productive, like jerking off.
As you told me on Twitter, I fucking hate you.
Yes. As soon as I was done watching this, I literally tweeted to you, I fucking hate you. Why did you choose this pay-per-view out of all WCW's ones? Why this one specifically?
Well, let me explain that. As my wrestling history goes, and I think I've talked about this before, you know, being a kid in the 80s, I watched WWE, but there were, about 96, it kind of stopped. In fact, it was when the NWO was formed. That was when I stopped because I didn't like it and all those things. And I wasn't watching WWE. At the point, I was really just a Hulk Hogan fan, and when Hulk Hogan turned heel, I stopped watching wrestling. Though I would see Hulk Hogan from time to time.
Oh, you're a former Hulkamaniac.
I'm still a Hulkamaniac. I just didn't like.
So you enjoyed his
heel.
Time in TNA.
Kind of. Not really.
You make me sick. You seriously make me sick.
I'm saying I didn't.
Sure, you're saying that now. I'm sure that deep down inside, you were marking out when he was beating up Sting for the 50th time
at
Bound for Glory.
No, not really. It was all crap.
When Hulk Hogan turned face at Bound for Glory, you were like, yay! Hulkamania returns!
No, because he shouldn't have been wrestling anymore.
Hey, at least you're smart to know that, and just.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Hulk Hogan. I just don't think he should be in the ring anymore. He should stick to what he's good at, doing promos.
Did you say what he's good at?
At this point, that's the only thing he's good at, even when he messes up. At least
the launch of the WWE Universe, brother.
At least you get a kick out of listening to it. Like, mm-hmm.
I will say it's more entertaining than listening to Bret Hart talk.
Yeah, there's that. But anyways, the reason this pay-per-view is... So, because, again, I was a Hulkamaniac, and I was... It was the point to where I went away for a couple years. And it just so happens that one night I turned on WCW, and it was the night Hulk Hogan returned to the Yellow of Red, which was the Nitro before this pay-per-view, which was Sting, Goldberg, and Hogan against Nash, Sid Vicious, and Rick Steiner. So I happened to come upon that that night on Nitro. I happened to flip to that, which made me want to buy the pay-per-view. I can't remember if I convinced my mom to buy the pay-per-view or I did the old-school way, and I know, understand you kids might not understand with your dang-fang-it digital technology and your
I'm not that old. I was around during the 90s. I'm a 90s
kid.
I'm not talking about
all the kids listening to this, the ones who, you know, use the dang-dang torrents. You know, when we had to watch something, when something was on pay-per-view and we couldn't buy it, we just watched it anyways and tried to make the images out as they scrambled.
Oh, yeah, I had to use the bunny ears.
Yeah. Well, watching the porn as the image was scrambled, hoping to make out just like a little red and yellow nipple.
I was never that desperate.
I was.
Jeez.
Which explains everything about me, doesn't it? Even when I was young, I was into boobies.
Well, I don't blame you there. Sort of a natural instinct.
But yeah, I just remember, though, I think we did buy it. I remember watching, or at least somehow getting the tail end of it or somehow. But I remember this is the first pay-per-view I basically watched when I came back into wrestling. Hence why I thought to visit it, knowing that it's probably crap anyways, to go back and visit it and see what very much was the final nail in the coffin that sealed WCW's fate.
I don't think this was the final nail in the coffin, but it was definitely one of them for sure. This is like definitely, if you're looking at this, this is pretty much a microcosm. You can just see so many things just wrong with this pay-per-view.
And so many things, and it's a microcosm, so many things that are wrong with WCW, and maybe not the final nail, but it was that first nail that, like, yeah, this is the start of the beginning of the end for WCW.
I think the beginning of the end of WCW really started was when they created the NWO Wolfpack.
That too. I mean, that was when they realized things, but they were still somewhat in competition, but by this end, this was July 1999, WWE was firmly in control, and I think having Hogan return to the Yellow and Red was a desperate attempt, and that's why I say that.
Yeah, by the way, can I say one thing about this pay-per-view that just I'm still trying to understand?
Sure.
That's why this pay-per-view even exists, because, number one, you're not making any money off of the gate. Number two, the only money you're making is from merchandising and the sales that you're splitting with the pay-per-view companies, so you're losing money every time they do this pay-per-view.
You know, it's one of those things I kind of did like that WCW did, is that they tried to do these, you know, interesting pay-per-view settings.
I do, it's an interesting saying, but the thing about this, the saying of Road Wild and at the first time Hog Wild was that these aren't exactly wrestling fans that are there.
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is that these, I think, would work better, you know, if their other pay-per-views made money and were good like they were back in the early 90s and mid-90s. And I say that because this morning I was watching Wrestling War 1990, I believe it was 95. The 60-man Battle Royal.
The precursor to World War III?
I mean World War III. Why did I say Wrestling War? I haven't seen those yet, but I mean World War III. I watched World War III, 1995.
Oh, God, those Battle Royals are a gigantic clusterfuck. The commentators never could properly call that match because it's impossible to do so.
Yeah, but that's actually one good thing I actually do like about this pay-per-view. I actually do like the commentary.
In particular,
Bobby the Brain Heenan.
The commentary definitely was not the worst I've heard from WCW.
It's always fun to listen to Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yep, even at his worst, he's still times better than Jerry Lawler.
Or Mike Today. Who was unfortunately on this commentary team. It was Tony Schiavone, Mike Today, and Bobby the Brain Heenan.
I think Mike Today works in this role because he doesn't have to be the lead play-by-play guy.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about that too, how, you know, the problem with Mike Today is that he's not a play-by-play guy, he's a color guy.
Yeah, he's the guy who, like, fills in the info about the wrestlers, especially the foreign ones.
Yeah. So, but with that, let's get into our review of WCW Road Wild 1999. God help us all. So, let's get into tearing this pay-per-view a new asshole. So, for WCW Road Wild 1999, our first match of the night is a six-man tag. We have Rey Mysterio Jr., sans mask.
And also sans belt, even though he was apparently the WCW Cruiserweight Champion at the time.
Yep. Billy Kidman and Eddie Guerrero. Versus Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse of Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope with Raven as their manager. Interesting to see the beginnings of the Filthy Animals.
Yes, and I gotta say, ICP are better wrestlers than musicians, I can say that much.
Well, you gotta give it to ICP. You know, they really, I guess you can say, kind of exposed that whole backyard wrestling world to a lot of people. Go ahead.
I was saying, I guess maybe they did.
Well, you know, I'll be honest, I really didn't know much about the backyard wrestling scene until, like, Insane Clown Posse talked a lot about it. You know, they had, like, their, like, own promotion and thing. Wasn't CM Punk in one of those at one point?
I do know that he, apparently, according to many sources that I talked about, he was part of a backyard wrestling league by Holly Dallas Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah, I remember him being part of, like, at least one show at one point. By the way, Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse called themselves Deadpool.
Yeah, they called themselves the Deadpool, even though they would later on go on in TNA to call this stable the Gathering.
Yeah.
Subtle, it's little, like, yeah, that's real subtle.
Yeah. What did you think about this match?
This was honestly one of the bear matches of the night, and I never thought I would say that about an Insane Clown Posse match.
I'll say it's my third best match of the night. It was a good way to start off the pay-per-view, because it was a sort of cruiserweight bout of sorts. You had decent power moves, a lot of quick moves, some good actual ring psychology, especially from the Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah, shocking.
Again.
Yes, quite shocking.
And, you know, it was a decent way to kick off the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I will say, I think this match may have gone like a couple minutes too long, but it was still pretty damn good, I will say. And it's good to see Billy Kidman hit Shaggy 2 Dope with a Shooting Star Press. That's very fun to see.
Billy Kidman is always one of the best ones to hit the Shooting Star Press.
Yeah, it almost looks like he hit him in the face with his knee, though, almost.
Yeah. Now, well, that's the thing about the Shooting Star Press, is that, you know, there's always that thing of carrying it. You know, if you push it too far to the left, it can look screwy sometimes.
Yeah, we've seen him do that a couple times.
Yeah.
Kind of land on people's faces.
It's why he's now in the back.
Yes. So that way he cannot do that.
Yeah. I liked Raven's role in the match. I thought he did a good job.
He didn't really do much as a manager except for sort of, at one point, stand over the wrestlers when they were thrown out of the ring. That's just like, he really didn't do much at all.
I believe Raven's time at this point was very, like, coming towards its end in WCW, if I remember.
Yeah, this is like, I think just very shortly before he went back to ECW and won the tag belts with Dreamer.
Yeah. As you can definitely tell, like, he's just standing there waiting until his contract is over.
Oh, well, definitely seemed like it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, shortly after that, he would arrive in WWE.
Yep. I mean, anything else? There's nothing. I'm trying to think about the commentary. There's something that really stuck out to me, other than they kept talking about how, well, instead of cheering, the crowd revs up their bikes, and of course you had the wrestlers going, doing the rev up sign.
The revving up got really annoying just after the second match. I was done with the revving.
Yeah. Well, with that, let's move on to our second match, featuring my favorite tag team of all times, Harlem Heat, of Booker T and Stevie Ray, versus the WCW Tag Team Champions Chris Kanyon and Bam Bam Bigelow of the Triad for the WCW World Tag Team Championship.
The one thing I have to say about this card is that they put all the tag matches together, and it really pissed me off, because just watching this match, I was done with tag matches halfway through this, because fuck's sakes. And after this, we have another tag match. It's just,
And then the rest are singles. And yeah, I agree with you on that. That's one thing about this card is you have all the tag matches at the beginning, and then the rest are single matches.
There's no pacing.
There's absolutely no pacing. And this is something WCW did all the time. And all their pay-per-views, they were always bad at pacing.
I'm sure this match wasn't bad at all, but I am just very terrible when watching back-to-back tag matches, because even in the best of times, I'm not the biggest fan of tag team matches, because up until like halfway through the match, they always follow a sort of same psychology.
Yeah. But you know what would have made this good? Like, have the Buff Bagwell-Ernest Miller match.
Yeah, because that would have been a nice cooldown match in between.
And then have this match, and then have that be followed by Chris Benoit and Diamond Dallas Page.
Yes. That would have made things so much better. But instead, we have just this back-to-back-to-back tag matches.
Yeah.
It's really draining.
Yeah. It's...
By the way, I do have a rundown here. During their entrance, Bigelow accidentally dropped his belt.
That sounds like... Bigelow through this pay-per-view, but also in the Benoit-Dallas Page match, was just...
Also, one thing I noted in this match was that Booker T is wrestling so much better than Stevie Ray at this point.
Yeah.
And this was obviously right before they broke up Harlem Heat for good and replaced Booker T with, of all people, Ahmed Johnson.
Yeah.
Remember that? Remember when Booker T ended up becoming just Booker and couldn't use
Booker.
The T?
Yeah, and then he became what, Sergeant Booker?
No, he became G.I. Bro.
G.I. Bro, yeah.
A part of the Misfits in Action.
Yeah. Though I will give the credit, they gave him the tag team belts and, you know, crammed them the tag team of the of the 90s.
Yeah,
which they were.
They were pretty much, aside from the Steiners, who, of course, weren't a tag team anymore. But aside from that, you know, Tom Heat were their tag team of the 90s for WCW.
Well, when I think of the tag teams of the 90s, I think of the Steiners. I think of the—I mean, I know they were in the 80s, but to an extent, early on, the Legion of Doom. And I think of the Nasty Boys.
I hate the Nasty Boys. Fucking hate them.
Have I told you my Brian Knobbs story?
No, you haven't. Go ahead.
Okay, so my former temple in Florida, the men's club would have a sports night, and I think it was the second or third one. They had Mike Alstott, who was a big fullback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but they had Brian Knobbs there. And there was a point where they would let people ask the questions. I think I was the only one who asked Brian.
Is Brian Knobbs Jewish?
No, I don't believe he's Jewish.
Oh.
But he was a Tampa athlete. That way it was a Tampa-based sports
Would
night.
You really call Brian Knobbs an athlete, really?
Somebody apparently on the Brotherhood did.
They couldn't get Vincent's booked instead?
No.
They couldn't get friggin' Barry Horowitz.
Or Paul Orndorff.
Or how about Barry Horowitz? That's a Jewish guy you can be proud of.
Yeah. Apparently he was friends with him and asked them if they wanted to come for the sports night, and he did. So I'm the only one who asked him a question. I got up and I asked him about his feuds with Harlem Heat. As I was like, hey, you were cheering for me? I'm like, actually, no, I was cheering for Harlem Heat.
Like everyone else proper.
He got a kick. And I actually met him, and he remembered me a couple years later. I saw him at a convention in Orlando. It was a horror convention, of all things.
Well, how fitting.
And he remembered me, so that was nice. That was the same one where I pissed off Grandmaster Frylock, and the guy who voices Frylock in Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
I have never seen that. I never watched that.
I pissed him off.
Oh, good for you.
Well, you know, there was a question and answer, and he's like, you know, we asked our questions, and then there was a point where a couple of us were asking a second question, so he starts telling us, be original, come up with a new intro. I'm like, okay. He asked me to, I'm going to proceed. And I go, hi, I'm Jason Star Fox from the third store in Andromeda's belt. and he, like, looked pissed. By the way, he's too cohort for laughing their ass off because, like, what, you told him to be original, like, but in context.
Right.
Because that's what I do. I piss people off. You know that better than anybody, don't you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But, yeah, so, you know what? Really, at the end of the day, this was a decent match. It just was, I think we agree, it was placed in the wrong place.
And speaking of being placed in the wrong place, our next match is another six-man tag.
Yeah. The Revolution of Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, and Dean Malenko versus the West Texas Rednecks, because WCW has long given up on being original with their naming, featuring Barry Windham, Kurt Hennig, and Bobby Duncan Jr., with Kendall Windham at ringside.
Yes.
I'll admit, this is my second favorite match of the night.
This wasn't a bad match at all, but I just couldn't get to it because it was the third tag match in a row, and I was just fucking done with this pay-per-view at this point.
Yeah, I can understand that. At the same point in time, as far as actual wrestling going
on, actual
along,
wrestling was good though, but I just couldn't invest myself in it.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, for anybody who, like, their biggest memory of Perry Saturn is in WWE
with the mop, fuck.
Yeah, if that's your bastard. Biggest memory, do yourself a favor. Not even watch it, but go back and watch this WCW. Like, I watched Barely Legal. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, Perry Saturn used to be fucking amazing.
I know, and used to do all these, like, high-flying moves. I'm like, holy shit.
And his feud with Raven was pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to watch that. But as far as this match was good. You know, seeing Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, Dean Malenko, actual wrestlers who wrestled great matches. And there's some great psychology in it. Little too short and just a little extreme with, and this is another thing for this pay-per-view, all the goddamn leniency with the rules.
That's pretty much WCW in a nutshell from, like, the end of 98 until their closure. That's like, they just, they'll constantly use weapons in front of the referee, do low blows, and just, it never made sense because they'll never announce these as like no DQ matches, just all of a sudden just random weapon shots and just illegal moves. Just like, where's the DQ?
Yeah. I mean, it makes it, just make it a hardcore match, or, you know, like, wrestle.
Just,
yeah. But you, for the most part, it was a good match. T-Dub, can you lower your speakers a little bit?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I noticed it during the Harlem Heat one, and I noticed it during the...
All
right. Yeah, it happened
is
again.
That better?
During, yeah, it's better. Well, I could hear myself
sorry.
Through your mic. Yeah, so... So, with that, 3, 2, 1... Well, with that, unfortunately, we don't have much more. I mean, it was a very good match, but I don't have much more to say because obviously you were sick of this pay-per-view. So let's go to something that probably made you even sicker. Buff Bagwell versus Ernest the Cat Miller with Sonny Ono.
This match was this match went 7 minutes. For the first 3 minutes, it was nothing but just stalling.
Yeah. I was tired of this match 2 minutes in. And I hate saying that, because I remember liking Buff Bagwell and Ernest
Cat
Miller. By
the way, we have to talk about this pay-per-view, the use of licensed music, because they were able to get ICP's music for their match, but when Ernest Cat Miller came out, he came out to generic music instead of James Brown.
Yeah, I know! I know! Why? Why?
That was just like the Sandman, he needs his music.
Yeah, we talked about that. I mean, at the same point in time, I understand what reason why at ECW One Night Stand, because it's Metallica, and Metallica has become a bunch of bitches when it comes to people using their music, which pisses me off. It's really a damn shame that their music is that good, because if it wasn't, nobody would be listening to their ass and no one would care. But because they have talented
yet selfish musicians.
Yeah.
Are we sure James Hetfield isn't at least a little bit Jewish?
Who?
James Hetfield.
Who's he?
Metallica.
Oh. I don't know.
You don't know any of their names.
I don't know any of their names. All I know is, because I really have long ago, when they turned on the fans with iTunes and everything like that, I stopped giving a fuck. I mean,
well, I can actually defend them for when they turned against Napster, because Napster was releasing unfinished material.
Well, that's one thing, but as far as the music's concerned, and as far as the right, you know, this is why I say that rights management needs to be reformed, because, for instance, things like this, if your music is used in a television event, people have the rights to that television event, that music should be allowed to be used in that television event. That's not an infringement on your rights. That you gave them the rights to use in that television event. It's their television event. They have the right to resell that television event, and it should be with your music. You got your check. Be done with it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous just how much it costs to, so you can keep using it after the first time.
It should be a one-time use. I mean, this is why the WWE is doing what they're doing with music now.
Yeah.
Because it's ridiculous. And I know I have a couple friends like, well, they gotta get paid. It's like, then create new music. This is the problem. All these artists, they make one goddamn good song and then just sit on the royalties for the rest of their lives. And I want to say to all these people, you know, that's why I love Disturbed. Disturbed is still making good music, and you know what? They tell their fans, yeah, download it for free. You know,
Evan Moody from Five Finger Death Punch said the same thing.
I know.
He said, take it and run. I do the same thing.
So yeah, that pissed the just generic music the WWE. To an extent, I don't blame the WWE. I just think their choices sometimes are wrong.
Yeah, choice they made for Ernest Miller it sounds so fucking terrible. Like,
I know.
Like, it sounds like something that you'd hear from literally the first thing they pick
it's
from public
domain. I know. I mean, and here's my question. You have somebody call your mama, which, when he was in WWE, that was his theme music. Why could you not use that? I mean, you're certainly using it now for
Xavier Woods.
Yeah, thank you. Xavier Woods. So why can't you use Somebody Call My Mama?
I don't. It's very strange. But, yeah, by the way, one thing I also have to know this match is Buff Bagwell's motorcycle dance. That made me chuckle.
Buff Bagwell was funny, and now he's a gigolo.
I know. He's not exactly a great wrestler, but he's a very entertaining one, to say the least.
And I felt his finishing move was a fun finishing move to watch.
The blockbuster.
Yeah, the blockbuster.
By the way, the roll-up here was just absolutely crap. Ugly.
Yeah, it was crap. One of the most ugliest roll-ups I've ever
seen. Actually, what I have written down here in my notes is ugliest roll-up ever. So I'm glad we were in agreement on that. This match was terrible.
Yeah, just terrible. I mean, you know what? It could have served as a good cool-down match, as we talked about before.
Yeah, it could have done one in between one of the tag matches.
Yeah.
But no, we had to get those out of the way because those are all mid-carders, and nobody wants to pay to see those guys.
Yeah, because this is what WCW was in the 90s. Well, let's move on to the
this is my match. This is my match of the night.
It's my match of the night as well, and the match that is the middle of the card.
I literally have it written down here, the real main events.
Yes, it is. And with that being said, we were just talking about music rights. Oh my fucking God. That's the first, unfortunately, jarring thing about this match that I hate, which is the music for both wrestlers.
Well, DDP first got his theme music.
Was that his actual theme music? Wasn't he still using Self High Five?
Well, that's pretty much what it was, but it was like a different version.
I didn't hear like the Self High Five in that stuff, so I thought it was domain music.
No, that was actually his theme music at the time.
Oh God, it's god awful.
I like it because Smells Like Teen Spirit, but not Teen Spirit.
Well, but his original one was very much like Smells of Teen Spirit. I mean, hell, there was the whole controversy about that in the lawsuit. That's why I thought this was public domain at first, because I thought he was still using his original theme that he had back in the mid-90s.
From what I heard, it sounded like it's the same theme song to me.
Maybe it was because I was outside, but it just sounded different to me. And I thought it was like public domain. And then you have Chris Benoit.
I'm not sure what music they gave him.
This is another case. Why not just use the music? I know you have it because it was an ECW One Night Stand.
I'm talking about Whatever by Our Lady Peace.
Yep. By the way, I love that song, too, by the way.
Yes, that was a very awesome song listening to earlier today. But when it comes to Chris Benoit's WCW themes, he didn't exactly have that many, I don't think. I remember him having he had the Horseman theme when he was part of them. Let's see. I'm going to look at his theme music. Just a bunch of generic ones are listed under here.
Yeah.
Under his Wikipedia, just a bunch of generic ones. Wow, Jesus.
I mean, in one instance, I'm not going to complain too much about his music, because just having being able to watch Chris Benoit wrestle in itself is something
I don't think they'll be going out of their way to get rights for his other, his games. I don't think that's going to be a priority.
It is funny to go on a pay-per-view and, like, and that's the thing is, if you watch this on the WWE Network, as we did, you know, there's the, where it has all the fast forward points as like here's this when this match starts and here's where it ends. But there's when you watch Road Wild, there's this big blank spot on the bar, and that's because that's the Chris Benoit DDP pit match.
Yeah, they don't want to put his name on there for some reason.
Yeah,
like you're gonna put him on the show, but you're not gonna put his name at all. Just put a blank. What?
Yeah.
There was also a blank part in between where they gave away a motorcycle.
So that was between the end of this match and the
next
match.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. But as far as this match is concerned, yeah, as we said, match of the night. It was an excellent match.
Yeah, he did a good job of putting over all of Benoit's nicknames that he had.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I will have to take off points because they mentioned Jay Leno the previous year.
Oh.
And if anybody remembers Jay Leno beating up Hulk Hogan.
No.
That should not have ever happened.
But, yeah, by the way, Bobby Heenan had, I think, the comment of the night, because there were multiple comments in this case. When Paige is whipping Benoit with the belt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he tells to Mike today, he's like,
oh, yeah, I remember
have you
this
ever
one.
Been, have you ever been whipped? Like, yeah, my father whipped me. I'm like, you know, you need more whippings. Tony, have you ever? Did your father ever whip you? Like, no, he didn't. Well, get in there because you need some.
Yeah,
and then Mike today asks, so Bobby, have you ever been whipped? I couldn't pay my father enough.
That's definitely a gold line by Heenan.
That was the line of the night, by the way.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? Like, man, it's like, it's lines like this that really make me miss Heenan. Like,
yeah.
Don't get just, literally, just replace Lawler with Heenan. I know Heenan doesn't have the same voice he had due to his disease and stuff like that. He's not the same as he once was, but he can't be worse than Lawler right now.
No, let's go to the future where Futurama is a reality. Let's get his head that's in a glass jar of water and bring it back to the present.
That would be amazing.
But, you know, again, back to the match was excellent. I love, as sloppy as Bam Bam Bigelow was in this moment.
Yeah,
coming
by the
off,
way, yeah, the Jersey Triad interfered, and the Revolution was watching on a monitor backstage. Well, what you
well,
could
you
call
know,
backstage there.
Yeah, well, it almost seemed as if there was a thing like he wanted to do it on their own, and they sort of talked like that. But it was never, in the video packaging, they never, like, verified that Benoit wanted to do it on his own without any help.
Yeah, it sort of looks like the Revolution was sort of like, we could help him, but we won't. It's sort of like Benoit's fighting off three people, but at the same time, it did make him look like a megastar, being able to beat three people on his own. But at the same time, it sort of made Jersey Triad look a little weak. So I think it would have helped if, you know, the Revolution came out, cleared out house, and then Benoit was able to fight off DDP on his own. Then he wins the match on his own, and that would have been a bit better. But I have to pick and choose the battles. This is probably the best we could ever get from WCW at the time.
Yeah. I mean, the Bam Bam Bigelow splash off the top was weak. I mean...
Yeah, we've seen better from him.
Yeah,
we've seen so much better from Bigelow.
But I did like the ending. I thought the ending was great, the splash, and I thought it worked well, and it was a great victory.
Yep, Benoit looks like a huge star coming out of this. And later on, I think it was next year, he became world champion, right before jumping literally the next night over to WWE. I think aside from Mike Awesome, I don't think I've seen anyone ever do that before.
It was the best move Benoit could ever make.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, he wasn't just going nowhere there. He was like, wow, this look at this place. It's fucking terrible.
That was one of those final nails in the coffin, when Benoit won and then jumped ship.
Yeah, when a world champion doesn't even want to be there anymore and just would rather be a mid-carder somewhere else than be a world champion at your place, it's a problem.
So he retains the WCW United States Champion or U.S. Championship. Our next match, the Millennium Man, Sid Vicious versus Sting.
This is at the time. This is at the point where I really just stopped absolutely giving a shit about everything on this pay-per-view altogether.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a bad match per se, but it wasn't a good match. It was. Yeah.
This match really just, I could not get into this match at all.
It was really all this for a match. Well, the next match as well. It all was a setup for a match they were going to do down the line.
Yeah.
I mean, and since we're talking about it, let's talk about it. The match after this was Bill Goldberg, or should I say Goldberg versus Rick Steiner.
Squash match. Absolute squash.
Absolute squash match. And basically, I think we're both in agreement, this was basically to set up Sid Vicious meeting Goldberg.
Obviously.
On a pay-per-view. Yeah, so.
And the match following that was just the worst Randy Savage match I've ever seen in my life.
Randy Savage versus Dennis fucking Rodman. My God. Just taking out referees left and right.
Yeah, like, no disqualifications. So just punching out referees, using weapons like nothing before, fighting backstage, so, like, no countouts.
I'm going to put it this way. The only people who ever made a porta potty fun and exciting in a match has been D-Generation X.
Indeed.
Just, like, really? You shoved Dennis Rodman in a porta potty and tipped it over? Wow, Macho Man. I really feel the madness.
This is, I think you'll agree that this is at least one of Randy Savage's worst matches of all time.
Oh, bar none. I mean, you know what? I'll say this. This was the worst match of the night.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say that...
I mean, it has to be at least tied with Buff Bagwell and Ernest the Cat Miller.
I'd say the worst match of the night is definitely Buff Bagwell versus Miller for me. And second place would go to the main events.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, these three matches were part of, like, this, I guess, co-main events to an extent. But yeah, Sid Vicious thing was just... Eh.
It was just sort of there.
Yeah, it was there. Goldberg, I was at squash match, and it's like, really, what a surprise. Against,
yeah, because that's kind of the best matches you could do with Goldberg, just have him go there and be a monster.
Well, they had some good matches where he was a monster, and yet they went long in their psychology to it. The fact of the matter is, you know, after they had him lose his streak because of a goddamn fucking taser...
They couldn't, like, have him be, like, destroyed by, like, a top heel they wanted to make. Like, they couldn't... Like, I think it would have been pretty good if, like, someone like fucking Canyon would have ended the streak. That would have made him its own top heel.
Yeah. But no, it had to... I mean, hell, DDP... DDP would have been, I think, a great choice.
Well, yeah, like Halloween Havoc when they had their match.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then, like, I think we've said our piece on Rodman and Savage.
Yeah, like, just it was literally just a bunch of brawling, punching out referees whenever they didn't get the three counts, and the next referee would just come right out and just start refereeing the match. It's like, no, disqualify them!
Yes! I mean, if you need any evidence of this match was a microcosm of everything that was wrong with WCW.
Yeah, this is every bad WCW match rolled up into one. Bad brawling, using weapons in front of the referee, using illegal tactics in front of the referee, just the referee not having any power whatsoever, and the referees look like absolute dipshits, and I hate that because I am a huge mark for referees.
I know.
And like,
by the way, Charles Robinson was in this pay-per-view. Still looks the same as he does today.
Yep, that guy has to be... He deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award for surviving WCW.
He deserves a spot in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yes. Just for saying... And all he has to say for his acceptance speech is, I survived WCW. I was Little Nate.
By the way, I believe it was like at before this the Savage Rodman match. It was at the end when they're setting up for the main event. There was my second line of the night from Bobby the Brain Heenan. Throughout the night, they kept going back to this one woman, and Tony Schiavone, I guess, was channeling his inner Brett Musburger. And he goes, "There's this one woman, sparkly blue bikini, got some pretty nice set of tits on her," and goes, "Like, there's my ride for the night." He says this, like, several times, and he says it, like, I believe after the Savage Rock match.
I know what line to talk about now.
And he says, "There's my ride for tonight," and Bobby the Brain Heenan goes, "The guy in the blue glasses?" Oh, that made me chuckle.
It really annoyed me how many times he was saying that. "That's right, my ride for the night." Like, shut up, we get it. Hot women, you're going home with a hot woman. We get it. Ha, ha, ha. You aren't Lawler. Stop trying to be him.
Lawler was better at it.
And I still hated him while he was doing it.
you never liked the sort of sexy female segments.
I just don't like people in their 50s. I don't like pervs. I don't get the comedy in that.
So you don't like Herbert the Pervert and Family Guy?
Well, at least with that, they're playing it. It's like, with that, they're playing it so you know it's wrong, but that's where the comedy comes in, with how fucking sick and twisted that character is. with Lawler, it's just like, fuck's sakes. It's like, everybody acts like this is a normal guy, a normal thing, and it's like, no, this guy's old.
Oh, so you're saying if they had somebody young doing it, it would have been better?
Yes, it's like, that's why I don't get mad when Nigel was doing it in ROH, was when he was doing it, because he's at least around a decent age still.
So, well, let's not delay any longer. Let's get to the main event of the night.
The main event of the evening. Yes,
first,
we did have a Michael Buffers for the announcement.
Yeah. Yep. Hulk Hogan, the WCW World Heavyweight Championship champion Hulk Hogan versus Kevin Nash, with the stipulation that the loser must retire.
And as you can tell by the results of the past 10 years, they totally stuck to this stipulation. And this wasn't just a bullshit cop out just to try to get just a few more buy rates.
Yeah.
Because WCW never does that.
No, never would they do that. So Hulk Hogan versus Kevin Nash. Of course, Hulk Hogan, the big thing was that he's back in the yellow and red.
And of course, he came out to American Made.
Which was awesome to hear. And I won't admit that. It was awesome to see him come out to American Made.
By the way, can
I ask
one thing? Why was Kevin Nash billed from North Scottsdale, Arizona?
I have no fuck. Maybe that's where his Super Shredder persona was from.
I do, because all the research I found on him shows that he's really from Detroit.
I know!
I don't get it.
It's WCW. Does anything make sense?
But at this point, I think Russo was starting to book, so...
Yeah, that would explain it as well. You know, for the most part... It's not a good match.
By the way, speaking of theme music, during Goldberg's entrance, he used his WWE theme because at the time, he was using his Megadeth theme for, like, the 1 month he had it.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this earlier. I just don't get why they didn't just use his original WCW theme.
I think they don't have the rights to use it. I think that's why they made their own theme for Goldberg, because they don't have the rights to use the WCW theme.
Well, isn't that an original WCW theme?
Let me look. I don't think it is. I think it's like from maybe it's people who originally made it from WCW, but let's see. It's by Christian Poulet and John Yves Regal.
Yeah, I just thought it was an original WCW theme.
Apparently not.
I mean, maybe I'll hear it later in earlier Goldberg appearances, but, you know. But, yeah.
But maybe they're just doing that just to cover up for the fact that he was using Megadeth, and they didn't want to pay the rights to Megadeth, since, you know, Megadeth is like a cheaper man's Metallica.
They don't like people using their music either. Right?
I have no idea. All I know is that Dave Mustaine is a fucking psycho.
Well, that isn't saying much. but anyhow, you know...
And also, I've written down here, Hogan is too old for Trunks at this point.
I agree.
Like, why wasn't he... Like, and it wasn't like he didn't start wearing the tights either, because when he first came to WCW, he was wearing the red and yellow tights.
Yeah, I know.
So why wasn't he wearing those? Why did he have to go out to, like, the 1987 yellow Trunks? I never liked those anyways. I like the red and yellow tights better.
You know what I have written down for this match? It would have been a good main event, pay-per-view main event, back in 1989.
No, well, Kevin Nash wasn't really a star in 1989. I think that this would have been a better...
Well, not so much that Kevin Nash would have been a star then, but just that the way this match went out, it was like a Hogan main event pay-per-view in 1989.
Oh, yeah, with, you know, Cash, with Nash pretty much... Destroying
dominating.
Hogan, and then Hogan hulking up at the edge and getting the miraculous victory.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That's Hogan. At the same point in time, and it's fun to see as a Hulkamaniac, and it doesn't exactly make for a great match.
It's definitely felt like a, sort of a nostalgia thing more than anything else.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't really work for pay-per-view main events. More.
I mean, I'll say this. There are times in the Hogan match during it, the Sting match, the Goldberg, the Savage match, where it all feels like very reminiscent of ZZW.
What do you mean?
Well, it feels like it's a indie promotion. I mean, maybe that's just because of the way the cameras were at the time, and again, it was before. Maybe I'm so used to high def.
Yeah, maybe, because this is definitely you can definitely tell that the quality of the video was definitely a 90s thing, but that was a thing that was limited technology at the time compared to now. They didn't have high definition until like 2000. Like, WWE didn't start using HD until like 2008.
It was a nostalgic match. Hulk Hogan won. They brought him back in the yellow and red because officially Hollywood Hogan had ran his course until they would bring him back for that one night.
Just nothing to a snippy makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I being a Hulkamaniac, I have a hard time calling it the worst match of the night. Fourth worst, I'll put. It's the fourth worst match of the night. For me, Randy Savage, Rodman is... Our Buff Bagwell, Ernest Miller is number one. Savage and Rodman are number two. Goldberg and Steiner are number three.
For me, if I had to rate the worst matches in it, number one would be Bagwell versus Miller, followed by Savage and Rodman, followed by Goldberg and Steiner, followed by Nash and Hogan.
No. So we're actually in agreement of that.
Yeah, I think the only thing saving Nash and Hogan really was the fact that the crowd was into Hogan a lot.
Yeah. They kept going back to that one kid with the glasses.
Yeah, by the way, the attendance for the show was 5,500.
That was the audience?
Yep. And put that in perspective, last year the attendance for Road Wild was 8,500, and for 97 it was 6,500. Wow. So 98 was their biggest year.
Well, that's because Jay Leno was there.
Fuck Jay Leno.
He brought in the buy rates.
No, he brought in the audience that didn't pay shit. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so that is it for WCW Road Wild. Final thoughts and ratings.
I want to burn Sturgis to the ground after watching this.
On a scale of 1 to 5, what do you rate it?
I rate it probably 1.5.
I'll rate it a 1 out of 5. And the only sort of redeeming thing that might make this on your list to watch it is, I think from a historical view, this was the beginning of the end for WCW. And at the same time, it's also a microcosm of everything that was wrong in WCW at the time and everything that led to them being sold. And it's the beginning of the end. And so I think from historical value, you can sit there and watch it. You know, it's going to be one of those, if you're watching like the highlight of Hogan's career, it's the night he returned to the yellow and red. But there are three good matches, but at the same point that the pay-per-view and everything itself was just crap. The attraction of being at Sturgis had ran its course. It wasn't fresh. Nothing felt fresh. And it just... Everything that was wrong at WCW... Like we said, microcosm of everything that was wrong with WCW. So 1 out of 5 for me. So with that being said, T-Dub, thank you so much. Do you want to let people know where they can find you?
Oh, yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at TWKOfficial if you want to contact me, if you want to watch some of my videos, RVTEntertainment.com and TheBrokenInfinite.blogspot.com. What I do is I review wrestling video games, I review wrestling shows, I review wrestling matches, I review video game mini games, and I review the first chapters of video games. So I have a lot of things I cover.
And then, of course, there's the WrestleCast.
Of course, there's the WrestleCast that I am on with Matty J over at RVTEntertainment.com, where we discuss the weekly happenings in professional wrestling, and we also, every now and again, have a nostalgia segment. We also discuss top fives, which we'll have another top five next week, which, judging by the time this podcast will be out, we'll have a top five then, because I'm guessing this podcast won't be out for, 5 days after we record it?
I'm going to release it aim for the middle of the week.
Yeah, because you just released the last podcast just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Sort of late.
But by the way, how did you think of it?
I liked it.
Anything you felt I did wrong?
Nothing wrong, really. I liked it, even though I didn't agree with that. I don't see how anyone could hate the Sandman. He's just too entertaining for me to hate.
Oh, there were some people who didn't get WCW, but, you know.
Sandman is awesome. He's part of what made ECW awesome. Just the little parts, each little part, cogs in the wheel that made ECW awesome. Sandman was part of it because he was relatable. He was the everyman who just likes to drink a beer. And
he was the Austin of ECW.
Yeah, and he was the alcoholic before the alcoholic. Also, Mikey Whipwreck was using the stunner before Steve Austin, so. And it was called the Whippersnapper.
So, to WrestleCast, of course, we've talked about Riftdown before, so. And as for me, guys, if you have any comments for this show, I'm going to let you guys know. Next week, I'm going to review WrestleMania 1. I'm hoping to have a guest. Aiming for maybe next week sometime, or this week sometime. So you may not be able to get it out then, but hopefully I'll have the next episode out next weekend as well to give you guys some time to, you know, send some reviews for the following one. But I'm going to probably try to get this out maybe Monday or Tuesday, so maybe you guys have some time. So if you want to send some thoughts on the next pay-per-view I'm going to be reading, which is WrestleMania 1, you can. But for all those thoughts and such, you can contact the show at our email account, which is absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find at www.facebook.com and search for The Absolution Network. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And while you're there, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content along with all our friends on the sidebar of the site. And that is it for the second episode of CMG Wrestling Reviews.
The best in the world.
Yes, sir. So until next time, my wrestling fans,
have fun storming the castle.
I'm the best Jew in the world.
You're all I have and you're all I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, I believe it, I'm too negative, I but I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I stand on my feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now.
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?